This is making me very angry because here comes the colonel. Here comes the colonel.
Ah, yeah, somebody dug up something I did with Peter Lorre from that old movie years ago. Well, okay, welcome back. Good to have you. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. The second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow, we're going to get back to our interview with Kent Satoff of ERCOT in just a minute. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help?
Ah, yes, throwing in the coins always awakens the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right, oh, spirit of the fountain, here's an easy one for you. The Pearl River forms part of the border between Louisiana and what other state? The Pearl River forms the border between Louisiana and what other state? Oh, spirit of the fountain,
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Aha! The spirit of the fountain knows his geography. This was an easy one, wasn't it? The Pearl River, of course, forms the border between Louisiana and, did you say Texas? If you did, you're wrong. That's the Sabine. No, the Pearl River forms the border between Louisiana and Mississippi. All right. Okay, now back to our program. Okay, we're back with Kent Satoff, known as the energy guru, retiring now from ERCOT. Where do we leave off, Kent?
There are a number of transmission and distribution providers within ERCOT, and they are all interconnected by a network of high-voltage transmission lines.
And then the other players like TXU and some of these energy people that are out selling energy really don't own any transmission lines or any production company. They're merely a sales organizations. Is that it?
They're what we call retail electric providers, and they essentially get customers, and they are responsible for making arrangements with the generators and transmission companies to get power to those retail customers. And they compete with one another mainly on the basis of rates. However, it's because it's the same system serving the customer no matter who their retail electric provider is.
All right. Well, one time there was I had some vandalism here. I had somebody steal the meter off the side of the house, just ripped it right out of the box, and of course I called the police about it, and they summoned somebody over to repair it. But would it have been my TXU provider that fixed it, or would that have been Encore?
It would have been Encore. They own those facilities. TXU is a retail electric provider. Really, they just provide billing to the customer, and they have rates that are published on their website that you can compare against the rates of other retail electric providers to determine who you want to provide service.
So when we deal with these electric providers, we're not really worried about repair. Repair is going to happen anyway. And what we're looking for from them is the best price in providing the electricity. And they negotiate that then with the different generating operations to buy it wholesale. Is that right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm getting the picture now. Now then, let's get on to really what I wanted to talk to you about. This gargantuan effort of, I mean, you must have seen. Well, I don't know, how much of it was coal generated when you came on with ERCOT, but I imagine it was a good bunch. And I understand right now a little less than 50% is coal generated, and that means that we're getting electricity generated from wind and from solar and from Comanche Peak a nuclear plant and any number of different things. And you've seen this grow over the years. Is that right?
When I first started in the business, and that was 40 years ago, I haven't been with ERCOT my entire career, really ERCOT was 100% natural gas fueled.
Yeah.
Back up until the early 70s.
Okay.
And at that point in time, there was concern that natural gas was going to become scarce. And so utilities started building coal plants in ERCOT in the early 70s. They had already, coal was already the primary and still is the primary fuel source outside of ERCOT. So coal plants, and we also have two nuclear plants that were built in the 70s and 80s. So right now, coal provides about 30% of our energy needs. Gas provides about 40%. The nuclear plants provide about 10 to 12%.
Oh, really?
And the remainder is mainly provided by wind. About 9 or 10% of the energy needs is provided by wind now. Wind really started taking off probably about 5 to 6 years ago. You know, we have we have a total of about 70,000 megawatts of generation in ERCOT, and right now we have a little over 10,000 megawatts of wind.
But wind is so unreliable. Coal is so tremendously reliable, and I guess natural gas is reliable too. But now, do you see then the abundance now of natural gas returning, and maybe less emphasis on coal as things move along, or do you think we're going to build more of these unreliable wind farms?
Wind. I wouldn't call it unreliable, but it is intermittent. You can't really control when the wind blows. Mm-hmm. You pretty much have to take it when it's there. So it's not as controllable a resource as coal or gas plant is. But right now, and mainly due to one, environmental restrictions, and also because of cheap natural gas right now, comparatively cheap natural gas.
Oh yeah.
Most of the new non-wind generation that's going to come online looks like it's going to be natural gas. We have really no new nuclear plants on the horizon, and that's mainly because of their very high capital cost, and really only really one coal unit that's in the foreseeable future, new coal unit. So we expect that going forward, most of our energy needs are going to be met by wind, natural gas. And we're beginning to see a pickup in the amount of solar as well. Mm-hmm.
The another coal unit, you say we're building another coal unit. I would think that maybe as natural gas expands, that what you'd be doing is really phasing out the coal. Is this a unit for spare in case something else doesn't work?
Well, I think that's certainly possible, but it's mainly depending on what environmental regulations are applied to existing coal units. Existing coal units that have already been built, investments been made, and depreciated to some extent, they are still very economical. The coal is still cheaper than gas, even though gas is fairly cheap. And so existing coal units produce fairly cheap power. But that could very well change if additional environmental regulations are put on existing coal units that increase their cost, or if there are regulations that just make it impossible for them to operate and meet those a stricter standard. So it's certainly possible that we'll need to replace coal units with gas units before their regular useful life is expended.
Yeah, well, you're very politely referring to the EPA's directives that going to war with the governor of Texas over the emission restrictions on these coal power plants, not only in Texas, but I mean all over the country. It looks like there really is an Obama administration war on coal, and the coal industry is crying to high heavens about it. But that's what you're referring to, I think, isn't it?
That's a fair assessment. However, ERCOT's a bit more fortunate, I think, than the rest of the country. As I mentioned before, we really didn't start building coal units until the 1970s.
Okay.
And so our coal fleet in ERCOT is relatively newer than in other parts of the country that, have used coal as their main generating source for for probably 100 years.
So what you're saying is that the Texas coal generating electricity generating plants are cleaner coal than the dirty coal that we find back in the Rust Belt.
Well, they're newer plants, so they've met stricter environmental standards than some older plants. And it is true, most of the coal plants here in Texas that burn out-of-state coal burn low sulfur Western coal.
All right, and then being newer, they may be easier to clean up anyway to meet new and more demanding EPA standards. Can we assume that too?
Yes, I think in general, the coal plants in ERCOT are in a better position to meet stricter standards than coal plants in other parts of the country.
Okay, so I'm envisioning now coal plants, nuclear power, generating what I think you said 12 or less than 20% of the power. I was surprised at that. And
in the 10% range. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's really a big surprise to me. And natural gas coming on stronger. So you've got all these feeds. Solar is coming along more. All these electrical feeds into this power grid that is owned by various different companies like Oncor and others. And you guys are administering the whole thing. How in the devil? I mean, what happened? I mean, all of a sudden, you've got all this power coming from the wind that's blowing now through West Texas and really giving us a lot of power. And then it goes down really quick. And how do you how do you regulate all this stuff? All these things tied together somehow.
It's an interconnected system that operates interdependently. We have right at 500 generating plants that feed into this transmission system.
500.
And, obviously we have to predict how many of those plants we need to have available to meet what our forecasted loads are.
500?
As I said before, the power has to be generated at the same time it's demanded. There's no effective way to store large amounts of electric energy now. So what we do at ERCOT is we monitor, for example, if wind goes down and its generation decreases, we need to be able to have some forecast of that happening and make sure that we have other generating plants available to take up the slack, so to speak, when wind dies down. And typically those plants are natural gas plants.
Well, do you have a traffic cop or something standing around saying, okay, look, we're going to get a little bit more power over here from this coal plant? And I mean, you've got 500, you said 500 feeds. Holy cow. How do you decide, how much you want from wind at this hour and how much you're going to want from solar next hour and when you're going to fire up that next coal plant to take care of the demand? This is going to be an incredible headache.
Yeah, well, we've been compared to an air traffic controller. We have all these, whereas they have all the planes in the air that they need to direct and coordinate, we have these 500 power plants that we have to do the same thing with. And obviously it's done electronically. We have sophisticated control systems. The owners of the generating plants have systems that talk to our system, and if we didn't have computers, we couldn't do it. So that's how it's done. And as I said before, we have to be able to forecast and make sure that we've got the right types of generators available to fulfill whatever the demands are.
So these computer systems that are helping you be the traffic cop, are these SCADA systems, S-C-A-D-A, that'd be supervisory control and data acquisition? Is that how that works?
That's the general term that's used for them, supervisory control and data acquisition systems. Mm-hmm.
Now then, I'm not getting off the subject, but I'm going to hark back to maybe 10, 15 years ago or something. The entire East Coast went black. And I don't know how long it was down, but it was pretty catastrophic when it happened. It was traced to as I understand, a tree falling on a transmission line in Ohio somewhere. Do you remember when that happened?
Yes, that was in I believe it was August of 2003 is when it happened. And what happened was really a transmission line. You know, sagged into an underlying tree, and you know, as the loading on a line increases, it heats up, and as it heats up, it expands and it tends to sag. And in this case, there's not enough clearance between that line and underlying trees, and so it sagged into the trees, tripped out, and kind of caused the cascading reaction of overloading other lines.
Yeah.
And it was what we call a cascading outage.
Cascading power failure. And not long after that, I seem to remember, the entire country of Italy was affected by a cascading power failure. Didn't that happen a few months later?
I vaguely remember that, but you know, I couldn't testify as to exactly when it happened and what the extent was.
Well, that leads me to the other concern. We've got SCADA systems here. We've got 500 different power feeds into the system. How do we know we're not going to get a cascading power failure for the state of Texas?
Well, we make sure that that first we operate so that we can lose any single element on the system, and the remaining system would not be overloaded. We call that operating to N-1 criteria. So we constantly monitor the system, and every 5 minutes, our computer systems do what we call real-time contingency analysis, where they look at these potential contingencies and make sure that the system would be okay if any of those contingencies occur, as far as the transmission system goes. As far as the generators go, we always carry some operating reserves so that we have more generation available than is needed to meet the load. So in case we lose some generation, we've got other generators there online that can more or less automatically step in to replace that loss.
Okay. All right. Now, I understand that there's an Eastern power grid, there's a Western power grid, and there's Texas. Is that it?
Yes. There are three main interconnections in North America, and it's the Western interconnection, which is essentially everything west of the Rockies. And the Eastern interconnection, which is everything east of the Rockies, except for Texas. Texas is its own separate interconnection, which is ERCOT. And you know, as mentioned before, ERCOT doesn't cover the entire state of Texas. The El Paso area is in the Western interconnection. The Panhandle and the Southeast and northeast corners of Texas are in the Eastern interconnection.
Well, Kent, I was asking your press secretary, Robbie, about the connecting it all, and I wanted to ask about the plans that I heard of a few years ago and how they're progressing to have all this interconnection occur in a place called Tres Amigos, I guess, in Mexico someplace. And I don't know if Tres Amigos is a pet name, or is a place, or just a pet name because there's three different power sources that are all going to plan to come together at that time. But bring us up to date. What's happening with that?
Well, Tres Amigos is a project, and it's a project that its goal is to tie together those three interconnections, east, west, and ERCOT, or Texas, and facilitate the interchange of power between those separate interconnections. The interconnections, there are already some limited direct current ties that are controllable. Unlike the large alternating current transmission lines, with a direct current interconnection, the flows can be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are existing direct current interconnections really between all of the three main interconnections in North America. But Tres Amigos would greatly increase that capability and really kind of tie all three interconnections together at that one project.
Well, what's the status? I mean, is this going to happen? We've been talking about it now for a few years.
My understanding is that they've received their federal approvals, and that they are in the process. I believe that they will probably tie together the east and west interconnections first, and we are currently looking at what would be needed to for them to interconnect into the ERCOT system. I'm not sure exactly what their timeline is, but they are in the process of developing that project.
Well, Kent, that's fascinating. Thank you so much for being with us. We're out of time. Kent Sathoff, who some people call the energy guru of Texas, retiring now from ERCOT. And we really appreciate you being with us. And don't forget, the sixth annual Green Technology Conference is going on in Corpus Christi this year in April 3 and 4, Corpus Christi. You can find out more about that at the website IEEEGreenTech.org. That's IEEEGreenTech, one word, .org. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I don't think the bad guys are going to go away. You think we're going to have to protect ourselves. Yes, I think it. The younger, the better. For example, we hear that this stuff is already being taught in the K-12 at some level in China, that they're already teaching this kind of stuff there. The kinds of attack and defense measures that people can use. And so we think that this is something that the earlier the better to learn this kind of business. And so we think that it can be taught at a very low level. All the kinds of attack and defense measures that people can use anywhere from the earliest time that they can become familiar with this, which we think is down in the K-12 somewhere, depending upon the school and depending upon the level of sophistication that the children are using at that point in time, all the way up into college and so forth. I personally don't see any way around this business. I don't think the bad guys are going to go away, and as a result of that, I think we're going to have to protect ourselves. My name is Dave Irwin, or J. David Irwin, and I'm the Earl C. Williams Eminent Scholar in the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Auburn University.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.